Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
Somewhere between science and superstition.
We have such sights to show you.
Strange Eons.
Welcome to Strange Eons Radio. That's Eric over there.
Hello.
That's Vanessa over there.
Hi.
I'm Kelly. Hey, guys, did you hear the news? Theaters are open in Washington State.
I did hear that. They're running at, 25% capacity?
Yeah. Just in time for Regal Cinemas to close across the country. So that's a bummer, but...
I got this big email from Cinemark, the one I go to the most at Lincoln Square. Here's what we're doing. We've replaced our air filter system. We've done all this stuff. Gone. Boy, this one's tempting. And they're doing the rent the theater for $99. And
are you sure? Because when I looked for Washington theaters that were doing that, I couldn't find any.
It was a different thing. I think it's their own thing.
Oh, okay.
Not part of that. But you can only get, there's only like 6 movies to choose from.
Right.
And the one who's surprised is, what's his name? Inception and...
Tenet.
Yeah, that's one of them.
Yeah, I saw that was...
Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
I saw that was available. What we're talking about is that some theater chains are trying to make the most of this, and you can actually rent the theater for a private viewing of up to, I think, 10 people?
Cinemark said 20.
20? Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's cheap. It's like $100.
Yeah.
The big question is, are you guys going to go?
Well, that was going to be my question.
Sorry, I ripped it from you.
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think that most of the studios are realizing we can release digitally also.
Yeah.
And I've always would rather just watch it in the comfort of my own home and not have to deal with other people at the theater. So if it's allowed, if it's going to be one of those things when it's released same day digitally, I'll probably just stay at home.
I've been peer pressured, so I really want to go. And so I underhandedly kind of slipped it into a few conversations with my big film buff friends. I mean, almost all my friends are either filmmakers or obsessed with film. And every single one was like, no, not yet. Not till there's an inoculation or not till,
I laid out what Cinemark's doing and Dina's kind of like, maybe. Because this particular theater has those giant chairs.
Social distanced already.
Yeah. And so you buy your tickets and then they block off if you're a family of 5, they'll block off the seats to your left and right. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a group of 2, they'll block off the seats to your left and right. So they're creating that. So there's all this stuff going. At this point, I don't even know it's showing. So I'm not running out going, yeah, let's go. But man, it's a tough one because I really do miss.
Yeah.
I with you on the day and date things, it'd be tough. But if they day and dated like New Mutants, I might be inclined.
Well, I think New Mutants is one of the films that is out in theaters right now in Washington.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Maybe
so, but the reviews have been so harsh for that that I'm going to just wait.
I heard a very middling review that brought me hope.
Oh. I thought, maybe I'll just not like this instead of absolutely hate it.
Yeah, very much. That was exactly my thought. I was like, yay. It might be tolerable because I don't like any of the last 5X. Well, I liked Logan.
Logan was good.
Yeah.
Logan's great. That's a hell of a film.
Can't say a bad word about Logan. But I have to admit, I would love to go. But I have that responsibility of the people around me are at risk.
Yeah.
So...
Well, this is all still so hard to figure out. Japan never locked down.
Really?
And they had the lowest amount of cases. And it's because they're a country that complies with rules.
Yeah.
So they all put on masks and they all wash their hands and they seem to be able to skate through this a lot easier than everybody else. And they live on top of each other.
Yeah.
I feel like if we could have all just gotten behind this... A lot of people would still have jobs. A lot of businesses would still be running, and we'd be living life differently, but still living life.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting to hear about the resurgences in Europe, and I have a lot of friends still in London and had a nice long Skype call with one of them who the information they're getting is beyond insane. They like the things we were talking about back and forth, like we were on completely different pages about how the virus works, how it transmits, how like things are supposed to work. Like their structure is like this weird bubble structure where you're only allowed to see one other person, and that includes like in your own household or something. I don't know. It sounded bananas. And then when we were talking about transmission, like my friend was like, oh yeah, no, it's all a lie. And I was like, what? Like, I know Boris Johnson's a dick, but like, I'm pretty sure that, no, it's pretty transmissible. I think that's why we're doing this. So it's, you know, it's just hard because I think that we didn't come together as a world,
right. Yeah.
on this one.
Well, yeah. Everything is so politicized. You know, it's amazing that a virus can be politicized, but it absolutely has been. Yep. And so that's how you're going to get your information, is depending on what your party is.
If little kids were getting sick, everything would be different.
Because I think the difference would be if people got sick, mm-hmm. showed signs, and were dying in 3 to 4 days.
Oh, I know. I think it'd be fast.
A totally different thing. But since it's, you can be sick, feel okay, get a ton of people sick, and be sick 10 days later, finally feel symptoms, I mean, that's where the difference is. Because that's a disconnect to where, oh, I'm just sick from whatever. You know, I've got, it's just a little cold, it's allergies.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's also it also affects everybody so differently that it's hard to say, you know, well, we absolutely have to do this, when they're saying half the people who had it didn't even know they had it, showed no symptoms.
And so some then people had stomach aches. Some people had like their foot hurt, you know, because
didn't hear the foot hurt one.
I heard that from a few places, that they were having like pain in their like extremities or hands mm-hmm. or feet. And then I heard at one point months ago that it had something to do with nerves. But now I'm so far out of the loop, I have no idea. Because if it was a nerve issue, it would make a lot of sense.
Sure.
Because that would explain why all these different parts of your body are reacting. But
Well, okay, good talk.
Uplifting.
Yeah. Have you seen anything good that we want to
talk about? Yes. I watched something that just delighted the hell out of me, and it was called Scare Me on Shudder.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure.
And I don't remember the male actor's name, but the female is the gal who plays Stormfront in The Boys.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And she is just dynamite. Did you see this then?
I did. Yeah, I managed to watch it.
Fun?
It was so fun. Like it wasn't perfect,
but
I had such a good time watching it, and the two lead actors in it were fantastic.
They really were. They sold the whole thing. I mean, it's the story of two horror authors who are stuck in a cabin with no electricity, so they decide to tell each other scary stories.
That's awesome. And like an anthology?
No, because...
That's the question. That's what everybody asks. Yeah. Is it an anthology? Because that would make it interesting on what you would think they would have to do.
They actually tell the stories and then kind of act it out themselves the other person. And I heard this and I was like, yeah. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, this is adorable.
It really was.
One of those movies, like, do you remember a film called Sleuth?
Yeah.
Where it's all those two guys
right.
in there that make the whole thing work. So if you had two weak actors in Scare Me, it would be like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, that is not the case. Two really, really strong actors who can do voices and make sounds and all of this stuff there. I would imagine that they both have a very heavy improv background.
I think so. You could see the theater seeping out of them. Nice. But yeah, it's really fun because they do little things as well. Like one of the stories early on is about a werewolf, and all of a sudden, you know, they're describing something and you see a werewolf hand come around the corner.
Right.
So it's not a lot, but it's just enough to be like, oh yeah, I can imagine it. And this is what they're thinking and the way they're telling it.
He'll tell her something, and then you see like a shadow on the wall changed to shape that thing that he's talking about. It's just really, really subtle and fun storytelling.
Yeah.
So. Nice.
What about you?
Oh, well, so I dipped into Bly Manor.
Yeah, me too.
I'm about halfway through it.
I knew this was going to be your reaction to it. I've watched the whole thing.
Do you love it?
I thought it was great.
Oh.
But the best line in the whole movie at the end should have been at the beginning.
I've only made it through one episode, and I thought it was a snore fest. And I also thought, this is most of the book. Where are we going from here now?
Yeah.
I've never read turn the screw.
So that's actually, honestly, that's my big problem with it. So I'm halfway in, and I will finish it, and I am excited to see what happens. But there's a couple of things. Number one, Turn the Screw. I've already seen like 3 adaptations of this movie. Yeah. So I'm like,
one of them this year, even.
Yeah, not that long ago with Mackenzie Davis. And it is page by page the same. And so they're adding in a few interesting additional things, but it's not the main story.
Yeah.
And so I know exactly where it's going. And so it's just painful because I'm like, oh, and this is when this happens. Yay. And so that's hard. And the other thing that I'm not thrilled about is there are some really bad accents happening. Really bad.
I don't have that problem, so
I hope no one does, because when like all the people who are returned from the first series, Haunting of Hill House, like all of those people, almost all of them are being asked to do an accent, and they are all horrendously bad. So it's, for me, that's just difficult.
I told you guys never to call me here.
You're Christ. So popular. Sorry. Is this your agent calling?
This is the first time I've ever left my phone on during this. And of course, instant, somebody has to call.
Instant text. So that's been really problematic for me. So it has been very boring for me because I know what's happening, but the little extra things are making it worthwhile.
That amused me just a little bit because you hated the first one because it didn't follow the book very well.
Had nothing to do with.
You don't like the new one because it follows the book too well.
Yeah, I mean, I love the first one, but I didn't read a book about it. So I was like, it's fully immersed.
Book. But I like both because I separate, like, okay, this is not going to be the book.
That's kind of, yeah, Harry Potter taught me that lesson.
I haven't read Turn Screw. And what the twists and stuff, I didn't think were hidden at all.
Right.
I didn't know that's what the story was, the Turn of the Screw. I'm going, oh, well, okay, I kind of saw that coming episode one. Oh, I'm in the minority on this. A lot of people fucking hate it.
Well, I mean, I haven't read any reviews or anything. I was bored out of my mind, and I was wondering, are there scares in it? Or?
Somewhat. The line at the end that should have been at the beginning was, except she goes to the lady who's telling the story and says, you sold the story wrong to us. This isn't a ghost story. This is a love story. Right. And it is.
Yeah.
It's not. There's ghost elements.
And they get stronger,
and they ramp up as it goes along.
Yeah.
Just like the Shirley Jackson one, there's one really, really strong standout episode. The end hit me hard, man. It's like, I fell right into it. I had no problems with it. Because by episode 2 or 3, I'm going, yeah, this is not going to be a haunted house story.
No.
It's just not. It's going to be ghosts telling a story.
Right.
And that's all it is. And I do wish it was 6 episodes long instead of 9. Because that beginning stretches a long ways. Mm-hmm. But the last 3 to 4 episodes, I was like, fuck, this is pretty good. But yeah, it is. It's getting brutalized. It is. I am definitely rare in my opinion of liking this.
Well, you know what? I'm going to live this show vicariously through you. Because
no problem.
I wanted so much. And I like the Flanniverse just fine. Hey, man, that's what he called it.
I know. That's part of my problem.
Like, I like him as a director in a lot of ways. I haven't actually seen any brutal hand movements, so I'm pretty stoked. I'm sure they're coming, but I can.
Yeah, I don't think they're in this one.
Oh, I'm gonna be so happy if they aren't. Yeah, so happy. So. But you know, like, it's rough. It's a rough one. I'm excited though for the last 3 episodes. Maybe it'll pick up and my heart will become filled.
Well, that was the first one I had to talk about, so that worked out, you know, just fine. With the, because I said I'm liking it. I don't have a problem with British accents, the accents, just because I don't know what they really should sound like.
Oh, sure.
And they,
hello, mate.
The mom at the beginning only tries sometimes. The woman who played the mom before, who's telling the story, she like occasionally drops in like an English.
I think that's his wife, isn't it?
The one who's
narrating it.
Yeah, I believe so.
I think that's,
yeah. Oh my god. The worst though really is the guy who's the drug addict brother from the original, who's playing the sexy seducing gentleman, the blonde dude. His is the worst.
His is really weird. But
it's all over the shop.
Yeah. But to my dumb American ears, I hear anything like interviews with people in Britain, and the variety of accents for such a tiny little island is staggering. So for me, I'm just thinking, well, this is sort of like being in the U.S. and hearing somebody who's from this one certain town in Alabama where they say it this way, and nobody else in the country talks that way.
Here's a hot clue, actually, and this is weird. So there are a zillion accents in England, let alone Scotland and Ireland. There's regional, town, streetwise, everybody has their own accent, but there is a common accent all actors pick up. At one point, it was called the BBC accent, but it is a very specific accent, and almost every British actor does it. So I could tell who was actually British because they did that accent. I was like, oh, yep, you're real.
Or like, what was it, the Atlantic accent that the movies in the 30s and 40s used?
It's very comparable. It's extremely comparable. And there's a couple of English actors in there, like the cook. He has his own regional actual accent. So he's very naturalistic, and he feels very like homey because of that. Like, not homely, but like he feels very down to earth and like
he's such an unattractive man.
He's not. He's lovely. Anyway, he's my favorite part of the series. So
yeah, that's true. Kelly,
oh well,
your turn again.
I'll say this: I think that Shudder is knocking it out of the park these days because I also watched The Mortuary Collection.
Oh, I have refrained from seeing it because anthologies have just been awful to me lately.
Yeah, this is the best by far of any anthology that's come out recently.
Wow. So,
a lot of people were comparing it to Tales of Halloween or something like that, and I was like, this kind of buries Tales of Halloween, which is a not very good anthology.
I just watched Tales of Halloween, and I had to stop 3.5 in because it was so bad. I'm just
there
gonna
go.
I never walk away. I had to. There was nothing. It was so just vile. Anyway.
Wow. Well, this has Clancy Brown as the narrator who's telling the stories.
Nice.
And it looks gorgeous. And I heard an interview with the director whose name I can't recall right now, but he had been working on this for 5 years. This is one of those guys that was just like, I'm making this movie. And he said every time he met with anybody, they were asking him what he was working on now. And he'd say, you know, I'm Mortuary Collection. And they're like, oh, still working on that one, huh?
Yes, you asshole.
And then... and it's been getting some pretty great reviews, and I'm very happy for him because after all of that work, he should get some accolades. Yes. It looks amazing. Huh. The stories are, you know, pretty much the basic morality tales that you get in these kind of things.
Sure.
From the Crypt kind of?
Yeah, very much.
Cool.
And he was even saying that when he cast Clancy, they had this makeup guy come in and build all these prosthetics for him. And then they shot him, and he was like, God, I was giddy because it was exactly what I wanted. And then I realized, wait a second, I've got Clancy Brown here. If I had a nobody, I would absolutely put them in all this makeup. But Clancy is so recognizable that I'm losing the whole reason that I wanted this guy. So nice. Clancy just plays basically himself, and he's quite a bit older than we remember him, you know? So. But it was a lot of fun and a very, very good looking movie.
Oh, man, you've sold it to me. I will definitely check it out. And I had zero intention of doing so before you mentioned it. So thank you for that. Yeah. I, on the other hand, watched Netflix put out a sequel to Babysitter. So they put out Babysitter Killer Queen. Mm-hmm. You know? I decided to rewatch Babysitter because I was like, oh, I need to watch them back to back and like really... I thought it was better than it. The first time I saw it, I thought it was good. And this time I was like, oh, no, this isn't very good at all. And then Killer Queen is also not very good. And I think the entire movie exists for the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because that actress has now gone on to become a much bigger deal. Oh, my God. What's her name? Samara.
Yeah. Samara Weaving.
Yeah.
Is that her?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they really like it's really to massage a scene. She's in a scene with her at the end. And the rest is just build up to that, I guess, but not in a fun way. So, you know.
I remember liking that first Babysitter movie, but I don't feel like I needed to have a sequel to it.
No. There's zero reason to have had a sequel to it.
Started watching it and then go, okay, this is going to background. So, you know, minimize the window and start working on other stuff and pay attention to it. And I remember thinking at least three times while I'm watching this movie going, God, this movie is still going.
Is this the sequel or the original?
The sequel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I was saying, oh, man, just...
It's a weird one. There are some odd shifts in it that make you, that pull you out and make it hard for you to continue because they're just such logic shifts that are, it's like, what? Wait, wait. We're not, okay, we are in a high school movie and now we're not. We are with this one character and now we're not. Like, it just, it's a lot of like, you really have to love it to stick with it. And who's going to love it?
As opposed to a through line of a story, it felt like building block segments.
Yes, yes.
And like, well, we'll put this segment here. I mean, you could have re-edited that movie very easily into a totally different timeline, and it wouldn't have changed the story.
Nope, not at all. 100%. No, I think you're totally right. I feel like there were a bunch of note cards with scenes, and they were just like, here we go. These are the cool things we want to show. Yeah. Let's just do it.
Oh, well. Yes. Well, we're talking about witches today, so I thought I'd fill one of the giant gaps in my history of film watching.
Oh, and, Wizard of Oz.
No. Hocus Pocus.
Oh, sure. Which I also have not seen.
You haven't seen it?
I'm so... What did you think?
It's fun. I could see why if I saw this when I was between 8 and maybe 14, maybe, I'd go, wow, this is so cool. Kind of like I saw Goonies really late. So Goonies, like, okay, I see why it's popular, but it just didn't hit me. This same way. It's really good. It's a lot of fun. I have no problem with the concept that people watch this every year because they love it. I'm not going to be joining that crowd, but it's good. It's fun. It was made in like 93, but it's painfully 80s. It just feels like an 80s movie, the way it progresses and moves. And
it was written by Mick Garris and sold in the 80s. And they've been trying to make it for years and years when they finally made it. So that might be why it feels so 80s.
Yeah, I did see his name on several credits, like production and a few things. One of his better written things.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's a good, fun family film. Watching with your mom would probably be a lot of fun.
Yeah, she might dig it. I'll put it on the list of mom safe films.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've seen it finally, and it's well worth seeing.
Okay, cool. Nice.
Before we take a break, I just want to jump in with one last thing that just a PSA. If you, like I, was really looking forward to the Hulu Hellstrom series based on the character Damon Hellstrom from Marvel Comics, you should pass that.
Oh, really?
Oh,
it is just the worst piece of shit I've seen in many a moon.
Wow.
And to the point where... you don't see the Marvel logo anywhere, and they're like,
Marvel's like, never mind, man.
Yeah, it does not work.
Oof.
So. That's such a strange character that if you pick the wrong area to build your story out of, you could have some real garbage.
Well, I know that Marvel Studios then either Marvel Television got sucked into Marvel Studios or something else happened, but they were doing a whole series that was going to be Hellstrom and Ghost Rider, all this stuff, all that's been canceled. This Hellstrom stuff had already been shot, and so they just kind of dumped it off. But it's interesting that it's not showing up on Disney Plus.
Yeah,
yeah. I was going to say because Hulu had a bunch of Marvel properties, right? Which is why Hulu is
ABC,
there.
Which is Disney.
Oh, there we go.
So.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense. But now I guess Disney probably has most of that. Does Disney have Daredevil?
No, that's Netflix. But I imagine that those were Netflix originals, so they'll probably always stay with
them. Okay.
There was a Disney series that was talked about them doing, like She-Hulk. And
I think that's still a
strong thing.
I think She-Hulk is still happening, and WandaVision is coming out soon.
So that's actually Disney's Marvel. More directly, it sounds like. Who knows, man? These companies are there.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yes.
All right, guys, let's take a little break and we will be right back. We're talking witches. Go ahead and give us a laugh, Vanessa. Really, really sold it.
I can't.
You're shut down a little from your last one, huh?
I can't. I know. I have stage fright now.
Oh, boy. We'll be right back.
The teenage witch. And with a twist of a wrist, she makes magic happen.
A rabbit!
Look, it's Salem the cat.
We love making magic with Sabrina.
Sabrina loves Salem.
Sabrina's so pretty, it
so cute.
She's making magic for Harvey.
We love making magic.
A trophy.
With Sabrina.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch comes with Salem Spellbook, Hat and Rabbit. Harvey sold separately.
And we are back. We are deep into Halloween season, Vanessa, and I think that's why you chose this subgenre.
Yes. So I believe you guys may have tiptoed into the world of witches before.
We have.
But I wasn't here, so it doesn't count.
You're absolutely right. I think we have called that BV.
Exactly. Yes. It's the great times BV of which you two were wandering through the desert.
Just searching for a third co-host.
One day, if we build this show, it will come. So I was really excited. I haven't dipped into a lot of witch-related films, and so this was a great excuse to kind of swim in the swimming pool of witch movies. There you go. Thank you. You can do it. You do them. I like that so much more. And so the one I ended up going with was such a surprise. I had zero expectations for it. I just had seen the cover and was like, oh, this is a generic horror film. Apparently there's a witch in it. I don't know.
Wizard of Oz.
You know?
You heard of it?
It was wicked. No. So I went with The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
This is not what I was expecting.
Can I see one?
No.
What's that for?
Make sure he's dead.
Sheriff, what happened?
No ID, no fingerprints in the system.
For now, she's a Jane Doe.
He needs my help right now. 11 o'clock, I'm all yours. Subject is in her mid to late 20s. Hair brown.
Black blood warning now.
Eyes gray.
What happened to you?
First, they bound her. Then they ripped out her tongue, poisoned her, paralyzed her, forced her to swallow the cloth.
What is that?
Dad?
Hold on. We got to hope she likes it now.
Oh, jeez. I didn't even think of that.
Well, okay. Let's talk about this. So it's 87% critics and 70% audience appreciation from the Rotten Tomatoes vine of humans. the gross of this was actually pretty low. It was $6 million. Budget was... unreported, although I found an article on Forbes where they guessed it was around 1 to 2 million if they had to throw a stone at it. I think it was probably a little higher because of the talent they've got involved. The director of this, super surprise, Andre Overdahl. This is his second feature and his first English language film. He started with Troll Hunter.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So crazy. He also did Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark more recently, which I'm not a huge fan of, but that's okay. And the sequel as well, which is coming apparently.
Oh, okay.
More scary stories to tell in the dark.
Scarier stories. Maybe they'll set it in the 80s and it'll be somebody running away from something for some unknown reason. Anyway. it's fine. Troll Hunter was good. The writer is Ian Goldberg, who is also the producer of Fear of the Walking Dead and Once Upon a Time. He wrote on the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles a little bit. He did 9 episodes of Once Upon a Time that he wrote and did 10 episodes of something called Dead of Summer, which I've never heard of. A second writer on this was Richard Ng, who was... his first credit was on also Dead of Summer. Autopsy is his second film, and since he's moved on to Fear of the Walking Dead. And starring some really cool people who I haven't seen in a while. So we've got Sir Brian Cox, who's playing Tommy, which is a very silly name for an older man, but that's okay. A.K.A. the lead mortician. You guys might remember him as Hannibal Lecter in Manhunter. Or Dr. Earl Garver in Superman, the animated series.
There you go.
Or any of his other 224 credits.
Wow.
Yeah. Emil Hirsch is in this. You might have remembered him from, hey, there's that guy. What happened to him? I guess he's in something. I'm always surprised to see Emil. He's great. He did really well in Speed Racer. He played also in The Girl Next Door. And he was also that douchebag guy in Into the Wild, if anyone remembers that movie.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, based on the book of the guy who's also a douchebag. I know he's dead. I'm sorry. I'm speaking ill of the dead. It's Halloween. It's fine. And then we have a couple of other smaller roles. We have Olsen Catherine Kelly, who's only done 7 titles, and she plays Jane Doe. She plays the body. She's pretty much an unknown. And then Ophelia Lovey Bond, who plays Emma, the girlfriend. She's been in 54 things, but the most well-known is probably Karina in Guardians of the Galaxy. So the basic story that we've got going on here, the tagline is every body has a secret. Pretty much. A mortuary that's run by this father and son team gets an overnight request to do an autopsy on a body that was found in a gruesome crime scene. So we start off in this crazy kind of crime scene filled with bodies that have all been destroyed in all kinds of different ways. It looks really weird and confusing. Nothing really is making a lot of sense. And then in the basement, there's the body of this beautiful, beautiful woman, completely intact, naked and half buried in the dirt. Nothing wrong with her, just dead. being dead, I guess that's wrong with her. So the FBI is going to want to look at this in the morning. So they rush it on over to the local mortuary, which also doubles up as sort of the only autopsy place in town, I guess. We then jump into this part of the story where Brian Cox is teaching Emil Hirsch how to do a good autopsy, and it's really kind of neat. You're watching him pull different pieces of body apart and talk about how you're learning all these clues from every single piece that you look at. It's just fascinating stuff. You kind of start to see this sub story that maybe the son doesn't want to take over the business. He's going to go on a date with his girlfriend, and she's like, have you told him yet that you're like moving out of town and abandoning his business? And he's like, shh, not yet. And then of course this body comes through, and obviously the son is feeling very guilty about potentially leaving. It's the middle of the night, he's supposed to be on a date with his girl, and instead he's like, you know what, dad, I'm gonna stay here, I'm gonna help you out with this. And his father's like, no, go on, it's fine. He's like, no, I'm gonna stay with you. And so girl goes off to sulk on her own and is annoyed. Father and son start to look at this body and slowly and methodically cut it open. And of course, you know something's going to happen. So with every little thing they do, I was just on the edge of my seat. Like, oh my God, is it going to jump up now? Oh my God, is this the time? Like the whole way I was so tense. I was like, oh my God, you're like doing this to it now? Is this when it like wakes up and like kills us all? But it's just, it's crazy. You're just watching this beautiful body. And in the meantime, on the outskirts in the house, like there's a cat that they have, and the cat likes to run around through the vents. And all of a sudden the cat is horrifically mangled. So, you know, something's happening. There's a little lead of like a bell put around the toe of one of the corpses. And you know, that's probably going to come into play somehow. And slowly these things kind of around the edges start to happen. And you're trying to work out, is it the body that's doing this? Is it, what is the story? And as they pull apart this Jane Doe character, you start to see all these weird revelations of, hey, it's a lot older than it was. It's got all this weird damage inside that we didn't know about. Maybe it is a witch after all. I'm
going to guess yes based on the title of this episode.
Yeah.
It is. It is a witch. It is a witch, but it's really fun how they reveal it and how they use this. And so I really don't want to give away too much more. I think it's very worth checking out. Super low budget, but my God, do they do fantastic with what they have.
Yeah.
It's an incredible film. There are a couple of things I'm not thrilled about. A few story issues that I have, but I'm willing to forgive it because, damn, it is a good freaking film. It's well acted. A lot of it is super well thought through. So when I say story issues, I mean there's just a couple of weird things. One thing at the end and one other thing along the way. But for the most part, the emotional beats are told beautifully. The way that the father and the son relationship and dynamic works is just so solid, so naturalistic. It's fascinating. I loved it. Yes. So
I remember when this came out, it did that prairie fire through social media of all the horror people that, you know, everybody's, have you watched this? You got to watch this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I knew nothing of it. I think it was one of those ones that people had mentioned, but the poster art looks a lot like quite a few other films.
Yeah.
So I just thought nothing. It's completely bounced off of me, and it wasn't until I typed into Google witch movies it popped up. I was like, oh hey, this might be interesting. Or underrated witch movies, also a great way to find some interesting titles.
Shh, don't give away our secrets.
Trade secrets. So the things I liked about this, obviously, like I said, the tension is great, great use of low budget, great acting. Great setup. Oh my God. Yeah. Setup. So fascinating. Perfect body. Perfect, beautiful body. And the thing is, you think it would so easily be overly sexualized because you've just got this nude woman just going from place to place, just laid out flat on her back. You're seeing what you're going to see. No, not at all. 100% completely professionally dealt with on every level. No one is being weird about it. No one is doing anything inappropriate. So that's something that I always bring to the table where I'm like, oh God, what's going to happen? Nope. Totally fine. Totally fine. And it is, it's got some heartbreak in there too. There's just, the story's really rich. Things, like I said, things I didn't like, the logic and a little bit of the ending. Some trivia that you guys might find interesting, you may or may not already know. Stephen King said that the film The Autopsy of Jane Doe was a visceral horror to rival Alien and early Cronenberg. Watch it, but not alone. Which is interesting because it feels like it kind of, I don't know, it feels like it somehow rips off some Stephen King stuff in there, but that's okay.
That might be why he liked it so
that
much.
That could 100% be why. It premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
The director actually said that after doing Troll Hunter, he wanted to basically prove something. And that's why he did this movie. Specifically that he could do more than a found footage style film. Objective. So I'm very impressed because he can do something other than a found footage movie.
It's a little interesting that he would do that considering he made one of the best found footage films.
You know, I think it's awesome to be like, no, I'm not good enough yet. I want to keep showing people that I've got the chops. And damn if he didn't. Like, I mean, I'm not a fan of obviously tales, scary stories to tell in the dark, but that's okay.
The big thing that might change, though, probably from those two to this one, is he had way too many cooks driving in.
Because there was a lot of, there were some really great things in there, and there was a lot of really bad things in there. So I think you've hit it on the head there. So I'll be interested in seeing what else comes out. He was actually inspired to do this by watching The Conjuring, oddly enough. He was like, oh, I could do something cool like that. I don't know why he was inspired, what specifically. I just know that that's what he said. Martin Sheen was originally cast as Tommy, but he pulled out.
Wow.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, I actually am thrilled he wasn't. I think that having Brian Cox in it was a much better idea. Yeah. Actress Olwyn Kelly was actually mostly there. You'd think that they would have put the woman who plays Jane Doe, you think they would have used a stunt double or, you know, had like a fake body. She was actually there for most of the filming, apparently, because it was just very professional. They wanted everything very naturalistic. They wanted to have things to react off of. And apparently she was a joy on set and just kept the mood very light. So she really helped the filmmaking feel safe for everybody else, considering she was the one laying nude on a slab.
Right.
She was also the first audition that they had, and they knew immediately they wanted her, but they felt like it wouldn't be cool to just go immediately with the first person who walked in the room, so they auditioned a ton of other people, but they were like, no, we're thrilled. And part of the reason why she was hired was her knowledge of yoga. She's really into yoga, and she had a great control of her body and breathing.
I'm curious what the audition for a corpse that just lies there on a table the entire time. What side do you pull up and say, I'd like you to give a cold read on this one?
You know, if it was up to me, I would have somebody lay down and then ask them to stay very still and then run around them clapping and stuff and see if they flinched.
They did. Yeah. That's a good idea.
I mean, like, because you can't help it. There's certain things it's hard not to react.
Yeah.
It was filmed mostly at a farm in Kent in England, which also doubled as the exterior of the kitchen scene. And the song that played throughout the movie was Open Up Your Heart and Let the Sun Shine In, performed by Cowboy Church Sunday School. So there's a nice little creepy
thing. Is that a band or a group from a church?
I think it's a church Sunday school. Maybe. I should have done a little more digging.
It certainly sounds like a little church choir thing.
It does. So. It sounds very sweet. Like, I know there's the Langley School of Music, and they did like a whole bunch of like cover arts and with kids, and that's really neat. So it might be a similar deal.
Nice.
So I would love to hear what you guys uncovered in your witch search.
Well, first
in your witch hunt.
Let me just say, I am so pleased that you liked this, because this was one of my favorite movies that year. And I thought the sound design was so good and creepy. And this was probably the last movie that scared me.
It was definitely, you know, it had more tension than I felt in a long time for a horror film.
Well, you were absolutely right, because every time they would show like her face, you're just like, the eye's gonna move this time, the eyes are gonna move this time, or something, and it just never happens.
No.
But it feels like, I've seen it like 3 times, and every time it feels like the eyes are gonna move this time. I just know they are.
And when the more invasive they get, the more positive you are, she's gonna be like, fuck this shit. No, you get off. You get off me. But no, like, it's crazy. Like, I really was so convinced from the first minute. As soon as they started cleaning her fingernails, I was like, oh, she's going to scratch you hard. I think they used all those tropes of horror films and twisted it against us in such a good way.
True. Yeah. Eric, you want to go next? Or?
I did a little more classic one and dark and Christy. The 1971's Blood on Satan's Claw.
When the grave of the devil is disturbed by the plow, the satanic essence of evil wreaks violent and revolting revenge.
But it weren't human, sir. There were fur.
Then it was an animal's remains.
It were more like some fiend.
And the evil grows quickly, attacking first the youth of the village and making them the devil's children.
Ralph, look. Look.
Oh, God, I prayed I'd never see that again. That's what they call the devil's skin.
Doctor, witchcraft is dead and discredited. Are you bent on reviving forgotten horrors?
How do we know, sir, what is dead?
Blood on Satan's claw was like a horrible disease, highly contagious and deadly dangerous.
Hail, Behemoth, spirit of the dark, take thou my blood, my flesh, my skin, and walk. Holy Behemoth, father of my life, speak now, come now, rise now from the forest, from the far...
Blood on Satan's Claw stars Patrick Wymark as the judge who tries the devil, Linda Hayden as Angel Blake, daughter of Satan, Barry Andrews as a victim but innocent, Michelle Dautrice as the devil's child, and James Hayter as the village squire.
Thou stole my master's skin. Shalt pay with thine.
Oh, I think thou could be saved.
These dogs know how to tear the devil's heel.
Thou telltale bitch, thou set the dance on me.
Of course I didn't.
Art thou ready to give thy skin tonight?
Art thou ready?
Satan's Claw.
Man, I've been wanting to see this forever.
You might like this one. You're a big fan of Wicker Man, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
The rotten on this one is 70% from critics and 59% from crowd, which I can see. It's a strange film. The budget, as converted to U.S. dollars, is $105,782.87. Approximately.
Wow. Low.
What year was this again?
71.
71? Yeah. That's not too shabby for, was this Amicus or was this Hammer?
No, neither.
Oh.
Oh, I always thought it was Hammer.
Huh. No. I'll get to that a little bit later. But directed by Pierce Haggard, Quartermass Conclusion and Quartermass TV Show, and the fiendish plot of Dr. Fu Manchu.
Quatermass,
sorry.
But, even I knew that one.
Well, you know, it's British, so.
I know. I'm sorry. I cheated.
Kelly just knows it.
I love those movies.
Right. Yep. Do you ever see the TV show?
I didn't know there was a TV show.
Nor did I.
Yeah, apparently there was. He did a lot of British TV. It's really what he specialized in. Writers, Robert Wynn Simmons, who wrote The Outcasts. Pierce Haggard was hired on Blow Up to do dialogue assistance.
Whoa, that's a pull.
Yeah. He doesn't have a long list of writing credits. Stars Patrick Wymark, who was their big name for the movie. And he's from Repulsion, Battle of Britain, Where Eagles Dare. Linda Hayden, who's known for a variety of things, but Taste the Blood of Dracula and The Boys from Brazil were a couple of her more known things. And Barry Andrews from the amazing Dracula's Risen from the Grave.
Obviously.
And the childish side of me enjoyed the name of the DP, Dick Bush.
Oh, no. But what a bad name.
Dick Bush went on to a pretty good career. He did Lair of the White Worm, Little Monsters, and Sorcerer. William Friedkin's Sorcerer. I
was waiting for another penis reference movie title.
You've just preemptively inserted laughs.
You know what's unfortunate? I didn't even catch that. I actually put those down as, well, these are interesting. Well, Little Monsters from the 80s. That's kind of funny, but love it. God. Anyway, so this movie starts off with a Roger Daltrey looking guy plowing his fields. He's got the big furry hair. He's got the curls. I mean, it's like, if Roger Daltrey was a little bit better looking, I'd be this guy.
Wow.
But he finds this strange dead head and worm crawling on the eye and all this stuff and freaks out. The movie's got a fairly slow start, but it does a good job of introducing characters of this family and a young couple to be wed, which is not the guy who found the stuff. Acting is good. Very British. It's very proper a lot of times, but not when it shouldn't be. Something freaks out the young bride, and they're not sure what to do with her. So what do? They nail her into the attic. They nail the door shut. And where something happens, and she starts yelling and freaks out, so they pull her out of the attic, and as she's going out, her hand hits the top of the stairs, and you see she has claws.
Ooh. Are they Satan's claws?
Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Is there blood on them?
No. Nope, not yet. So while that's happening, at the same time, some kids are playing in the dirt, and the young lady who goes on to be like the lead villain finds a similar looking claw in the dirt.
Like a severed claw or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the groom goes on to find out what the hell was going on in the attic and ends up getting attacked by a large handed claw. Except it's an illusion and he ends up cutting off his own hand.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Beautiful.
So there's Robert plays a religious man who's like, they never really name. I don't think they name what his religion is, but he's there to help him out and takes a book from him on witchcraft. And I'm going to go back and study. So, you know, I'm like, okay, you can afford him the whole time. So he leaves. He's really good in this. So I really enjoyed him as an actor. What the film does really good, and you hit on this with the Autopsy of Jane Doe, is it builds this very strange doom darkness feeling. Just it's okay, this is going to get really dark and disturbing as it goes along, and that is built up really, really well. One thing to be worried about, there's a ginger in the film.
Oh no. Is this back when we were afraid of gingers?
Yeah, he is evil, sort of. He's actually kind of a side character, but he is definitely not a nice guy.
Sure.
Him and his buddy find a girl and they kind of like tie her up and said, "We're going to play cannibal." I'm like,
"Oh, what?
What?
Uh-oh.
What?"
So
is he a kid or an adult?
They're playing children. There's some uncomfortable things about this film that are kind of in some of the other British films made at this time. The lead actress is 17.
Oh, sure.
And she is prominently featured, shall we say? So it's like, Jesus Christ, she's so, it's very like, yeah. But during this is another girl that they capture and they take off to the two boys take off and she shows up and there's this big group of people standing around doing some kind of witch ceremony in which they rape her, which is fairly uncomfortable.
Sounds like a very typical witch ceremony, I guess.
Okay. But after that comes out, a group of men chase down one of the women that was there and does a nice little witch ceremony. She sort of floats, but it doesn't go real well for her.
Oh, no.
The guy who originally found the thing at the beginning finds her and brings her to a doctor, and they're sort of saving her, but they know she's been given to the devil because she's got this strange patch of hair on her leg. I'm watching this going, women growing hair in strange places being something that upsets older men. Is there like a symbolism here that we're trying to go with?
Well, when is this all taking place?
1600s, I believe.
Not a lot of women shaving their legs in the first place. That's in the 1600s.
That was my thought.
So how are they able to tell that she's got a hairy patch?
Oh, because she's fully leg shaved.
Wow.
And if she...
A pioneer.
Yes,
she was
yes.
on it. She was cold, I'll tell you that.
Or sometimes it's on the back. They also grow. Actually, the hair grows on the men too when they get evil. But sometimes on the back, sometimes on the leg. And if you did grow hair like this patch is, you probably would be inclined to shave it because you know it looks like you've
weird.
Got the top of your head growing on your back. Mm. So they come up with the idea to remove it, and it's a very uncomfortable and fairly well done scene of cutting off the. Just sort of trimming off this top layer of skin to get
Ouch.
That out. And then Roger Daltrey learns that he has hair on his skin now. So he's hides that and gets a little worried. The film is full of really good sound work. The sound is solid and creepy and well done. The music is particularly weird. It's not a usual soundtrack music, but it has those elements, but then it changes about. And they did another real smart thing they do is they keep the costuming wonderfully simple, so it feels much more realistic. Like you watch a Hammer film, the costumes are amazing, but they're like way over the top sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't think an entire group of church would look like this, but it looks really cool. The end ceremony is well done, and that's where some of the sound work really comes out, and they're doing really interesting stuff. It ends really quickly. Mm. The ending sort of, oh, we're getting to that end battle moment, and then that's done. Like, all right. Okay. Overall, this is a good film. It's well made. It's uncomfortable. It's dark. The acting is uniformly good. The lady who got... Strange things you learn when you research these films. The lady who got attacked is, didn't write her name out, but she's a recognizable character from Doctor Who. She was one of his, I don't know if he was his direct assistant, but she was a regular on the show for years. And she was really excited to do this scene because she was going to do something different.
Oh.
She wanted to do a dark and disturbing scene. I go, okay.
Dreams do come true.
Congratulations. The film was originally titled The Devil's Touch, which was a little weird, and they thought sounded like a very different kind of film.
Mm.
So they changed that. And this was a Severin Blu-ray that I've got, and it's labeled as Satan's Skin. The opening credits are Satan's Skin.
Huh.
I'm like, oh, that's an interesting choice. The executive producer, i.e. the money guy, wanted it to be called The Ghouls Are Amongst Us.
I like it.
Which is a terrible title.
No, I mean, I don't like it.
For this film, it's a terrible title. I don't know what the ghouls would be in this film.
We're the ghouls all along.
It's considered one of the big three of folk horror, along with Wicker Man and Witchfinder. They got a lot of pushback from this to make it... to make it more like Witchfinder when they were making it. The producers wanted to basically steal more from them more. They tried to hire both Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, but they could not get either one of them. They also went after Donald
Pleasance?
Yes.
They couldn't get Donald Pleasance on this?
No. Well, they're apparently fairly low budget.
Okay.
The guy they did get, Patrick Warmark, at this point was later in his career. He died fairly shortly after this. Mm-hmm. And apparently he had a crate of wine delivered to the set daily when he was working.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
But in the documentary, they're interviewing the director Haggard, and he's saying it never interfered with his ability to work. He was great. He was wonderful to work with, but he was always drinking.
Wow. It was some really watered down wine.
I have a new hero.
Kathy Vespers. That was the lady that was from Doctor Who.
Oh, sure.
And normally when you're doing a film, a scene like that, as we probably all know, is very meticulously planned out. You know, what it's going to be, what's going to be seen or not seen. This was not. It was largely put together the day of shooting.
Mm, just like, sprung it on her.
She knew it was, knew it was there, but what it was going to be, they decided to unplan it and make it more visceral or something. I don't know, more improv'd. The U.S. release, the only problem they really ran into was the Linda Hayden's nude scene where instead of cutting it, they just darkened the footage so much that you couldn't see her.
That's a creative answer.
Yep. Satan's Skin scene where they cut it off was inspired by an actual event one of the screenwriters went through when a doctor performed an operation on him while he was laid out on a kitchen table.
Mm.
Like, ooh, that'll stick with you.
Yeah, no kidding.
The film was originally released as a double feature with The Beast in the Cellar, which I have discussed on this show previously.
Oh, okay.
The barn from The Beast in the Cellar is also used in this film. And the actress Linda Hayden considers it one of her best films. She actually went on to do a lot of stuff. She fell and hurt herself running down the hill at one scene and was taken to full makeup to a local hospital where she was, they weren't quite sure what to do with her in some way. She's like, just my feet.
What about the gigantic gash on your forehead? It's fine.
Don't worry about it. I'll power through.
And the reason the nude scene was controversial wasn't how young she was, is that was in a church.
Of course. Oh, that's beautiful. Ugh, you can't write that stuff.
Actually, they literally wrote it.
I meant from a higher level.
The reaction, you mean?
Or top.
Okay.
Anyways, the locations were almost all found, except for the interiors, obviously, but they were not created. They're largely just used what was in Bryn, which just makes, is just amazing. It's like, hey, here's this 300-year-old building. Let's shoot here. and the reason you mentioned Hammer early, they actually specifically worked against Hammer's aesthetic because they wanted it to be more, nowadays you'd say gritty, but they went darker and more real where Hammer is very glossy.
Right.
So they actually were trying to go against Hammer in that.
Interesting. Man. But,
solid film. Well worth watching if incredibly uncomfortable in a few times.
Boy, sounds like a winner. I'm going to have to check this out. I've seen it on everybody's lists, and it's just a movie that I've never gotten around to.
Yeah. Well, I was introduced to it by our buddy Matt.
Yeah.
When we went to see The Witch in theaters a few years ago, he does, you know, it's Matt. You can't just go see a movie in a theater. It's got to be a production. And so he screened that there, and I'm going, well, this is really good. So I wanted to talk about it for a while. I was going to talk about it during our Devil one, but you don't actually see the devil.
Right.
So that hand isn't enough.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Because it's not played up like that.
Man, you've seen a couple of films I really want to check out between that and Witchfinder. And it's good. My list is getting too long.
Witchfinder is really good. Well, I am very grateful for you picking this topic because in my research, it led me to an episode of Pure Cinema, that podcast, and they were talking just recently about made-for-TV movies, and a movie that I've been searching for 40 years, I was able to find, and I had thought this movie was called Burnt Offerings.
Okay.
And now there is a movie, a very good movie called Burnt Offerings, and imagine my disappointment when I watched it, and I was like, that's not the movie I thought it was. and then I thought, maybe it's just Offerings. Well, what I chose was from 1981, a TV movie called Midnight Offerings.
Oh, now is this where you start crying and tell me to be a good little girl? Look, just because you chose not to use it doesn't mean I have to. Want to know the truth? I think you were scared, and I think you were stupid. I'm neither one. I'm going to have what's out there. I'm going to have it all.
What about the things you won't have? It's a trade-off, Vivian. You know that. What about the things you won't ever enjoy? The things you won't ever feel? What about the loneliness? Don't tell me you don't feel that. I've seen it.
Like you said, Mom. It's a trade-off.
I'm going to stop you.
Oh, Mom.
That power came to you through me. I have it, too. You haven't used it.
You've never exercised it. It's gone weak and flabby on you, Mom.
You think so? Don't try me, Vivian.
Budget? No idea. It's a TV movie. Yeah. Box office? Not applicable. Rotten Tomatoes critics? Nothing.
Never.
Audience? Nope. You can find this little gem on YouTube, though, in its entirety. It was directed by Rod Holcomb, who started directing in 1977 with The $6 Million Man. He directed a couple episodes, including the Bionic Bigfoot episode.
Oh, the episode.
Yes. He directed episodes of Battlestar Galactica, BJ and the Bear, Fantasy Island, Greatest American Hero, and every single TV series up until 2017.
Sure. One of them.
Yes. It was written by Juanita Bartlett, who wrote a lot of episodes of Little House on the Prairie. She was a producer and main writer on The Rockford Files, wrote for Greatest American Hero, Scarecrow, Mrs. King, and passed away in 2014, 86 years young.
Damn.
What a lady.
Yep. This is starring Melissa Sue Anderson, who has done just a ton of television, including The Loneliest Runner, The Love Boat, The Equalizer. She played Kitty Pryde in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends show. But she is best known as Mary Ingalls in Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, sure.
It also stars Mary Beth McDonough, who's been in episodes of The Love Boat, Hunter, ER, Ally McBeal, The West Wing, Boston Legal, but is best known as Aaron Walton on The Waltons for 9 years and many TV movies.
This is such a clean-cut cast so far. Yeah.
And Patrick Cassidy. This is his very first role, but he goes on to have 58 credits after this, including recurring roles on The Love Boat, the Dirty Dancing TV series, Lois and Clark, Smallville, ER, and it also is the very first movie that Vanna White shows up in.
Oh, Vanna. Man, this is all very clean.
Well, it's 1981, too, so it's, you know. But the big selling point I remember on this was these two good girls from Good Girl TV series at the time, The Waltons and Little House on the Prairie, are playing witches who do not get along in high school. So
that sounds like my kind of movie.
It's so much fun. I have been searching for this forever, and I watched it, and I was delighted all the way through.
That's great.
So Melissa Sue Anderson plays Vivian, who is really, really pretty, beautiful eyes. She's the hot girl at school, and she's got everything going for her, but she has a dark secret. Within the first 2 minutes, you learn what her dark secret is. She's a witch. We see a teacher leaving the school, and then he gets in his car, and we get intercuts of something happening at a black magic altar, almost voodoo type stuff going on, and then a picture of this guy gets put into this little plate and lit on fire, and as he's driving down the road, his car explodes.
Oh my gosh. Damn.
I love this because it's treated as a accident. You know, the next day at school, oh, he was in a horrible car accident. I'm like, well, a one car accident. When your car is just driving down the road and it bursts into flame, that's a little odd, but nobody really thinks much about it. But what we realize is that teacher was going to flunk the boyfriend of Vivian, who is the Patrick Cassidy. A football guy, and that would have ruined his football chances. But he's broken up with Vivian already, and so he knows something's going on, and he doesn't like it. And then she does this for him, and he's like, "Thanks, but no thanks." We see Vivian go home and lock herself in her room, and in her closet is this black magic altar that we saw in the beginning, and she's got a black cat. And all sorts of stuff. It's very, very clear that she is a witch.
At least on TV.
Right. Enter Robin, who's played by Mary Beth McDonough. She is a new girl in school, very cute and wholesome and all this. But guess what? Also a witch.
No.
She doesn't realize she is. She's just moved into town because they got into some trouble at the last town, and we don't know really what it is, but pretty soon we find out, because Vivian does not like this new girl, especially because her boyfriend or her ex-boyfriend is making googly eyes at her. So she casts a spell and tries to throw this clock off the mantle at Robin while she's at home, and Robin, it's coming towards her. She doesn't see it. We all know what's going to happen because Vivian has, you know, upped the stakes immediately. She's proven that she's willing to kill. But Robin turns around and puts her hand out, and the clock flies backwards into the fireplace where it explodes.
Poor clock, man. What did it do?
Explode. Wow.
That's a good point. So now we realize, and she goes crying to her dad. Her dad is a bit of an asshole. She says, "It's happening again, Daddy. It's happening again." And he's got a really good chance right there to say, "Hey, we'll get through this together."
Yeah.
That's not how he reacts.
Oh, no.
He's like, "What did you do this time? I thought we agreed you were going to stop this stuff.
Oh,
and
no.
You've got to get a handle on this stuff." You know, I'm just like, wow. Okay.
That's it was some
80s, 70s.
Yeah.
Dad there,
yeah, exactly. Tough love. Meanwhile, Robin and Patrick are getting along like gangbusters. Vivian is very unhappy about this. Vivian's dad loves her so much. He just thinks she's the best. And things are going pretty great for the family there. His boss mysteriously died, and he has been promoted.
Ooh, fancy that.
Yeah. And he and the wife are not on the same team as far as Vivian goes. The mom doesn't really like her too much, and the dad calls her out. And the dad is the old boss from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so he's saying, "You never liked her, and I don't know why. She's better than our other six kids."
Whoa.
And
seventh daughter?
Exactly. So we come to learn that the mom is also a witch. And she has kind of given all that up, all of her witchy stuff, to become a mother and all this stuff. We learned that she wanted to have this daughter aborted.
Oh, whoa. Because, that's a huge plot point for this time.
Yeah, yeah. But also because it was the seventh and she knew.
She knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
So there's some cool stuff going on in here.
Yeah.
Long story short. Robin,
I mean, how
and
many
Patrick,
hours long
yeah,
is this?
It's an hour and 48 minutes or something.
So it was a movie of the week as opposed to a mini.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So Robin and Patrick start seeing each other, and Viv gets very upset, and she kind of corners Robin in the wood shop. And this is the scene that I always remembered. They have this telekinetic battle in the wood shop where they're throwing saws at each other nail guns are shooting off around them and everything. And it's really cool. It's basically Carrie if we had found out that there was another telekinetic at school and they just didn't like each other. So they have this one great little battle.
You just nailed the elevator pitch for this film.
Yeah, yeah. And basically, it boils down to Robin and Viv are going to clash. And at one point, Viv gets her on a big burning, or on a pile of wood, which she then, you know, telekinetically lights and says to her, "Burn, witch, burn."
Oh.
And then Vivian's mom comes in and kind of saves the day. Aww. So it, so much fun. I loved this movie back then. I loved it now. And I was so happy to find it again. And it's all thanks to you, Vanessa.
Yay. Oh my
for,
God, I'm so
for picking
excited.
Witches again.
I have to check this out. That sounds absolutely incredible.
That's very cool.
It's, I mean, you got to watch it just for the flared jeans and the gigantic hair.
Yeah. 100%. All you had to say was flared. I'm there.
So, yay.
Good, yeah.
What a fun little episode
we
this
all
was.
All liked our movies.
Ah, it's so nice. Mm-hmm. What a good feeling.
It's so interesting that Eric goes, "We all liked our movies," as if he and I ever talked about movies we don't like.
I was just going to, you know, gloss over that.
I can't help myself, guys. Sometimes I just have to get mad.
You know what?
Yep.
This is we're in Halloween season. I want to stick with Halloween type stuff for the next subgenre.
What do you got for us?
I'm thinking let's go. It doesn't have to be Halloween masks, but I'm thinking something with masks or costumes involved in the storyline.
Ooh, yep. Man, okay, cool.
So
There's a few options, I think, for that.
Right. Right. Yes, there are.
I don't know. Halloween movies with
I'm gonna say this. Marvel movies are right out.
That's fair.
Fine.
There's a lot of masks and costumes in that, and it doesn't really fit what I want to do with this episode.
Okay. That's fair. All right. I'm really sad about this because I really wanted to see Iron Man 3 again, but, you know.
You got to go with 2.
Yeah, as I say, Iron Man 3 is all right.
Yeah, Iron Man 3 is actually pretty good.
I remember hating it. Maybe I got to rewatch it. Anyway.
Okay. Well, we knew we had to get her bad-mouthing some movie before the end of the episode, and we have hit our quota once again. Many thanks to everybody who's out there saying very nice things about us, sharing the episodes when they come out. Really appreciate that. I know that we're still waiting on some 5-star reviews.
I was just going to say, Jason Weiss gave me a 5-star challenge. I haven't had a chance to watch yet, though.
Jason.
Alexander Jodorowsky or Jodorowsky film that I haven't seen yet called Santa Sangria, which I've heard very good things about it, and I guess is a horror film. So I'll be checking that one out hopefully here.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Maybe in November.
Jason's one of those guys I'm talking about where I say thank you because he's always saying really nice things and commenting on the Facebook page. I really appreciate that, Jason. Mm-hmm. The one last thing I want to mention is we are now on a new podcast.
We've got a new podcast host.
Yeah. Hopefully if everything went right, you don't notice anything different. Yep. You subscribe and everything is just dropping in like it usually does. Yeah. But if you find out that something is not working, please let us know and we'll figure it out.
Yep. For those of you that might be interested, we now do have transcriptions available for it. I understand some people actually read podcasts because, you know, they can't hear. So,
sure.
I'm sure this can all be used as evidence against us in some upcoming trial.
I was just thinking that. I was like, oh, what'd I say?
Right. Uh-huh. And also, we are on Amazon Music now, too. So if you're just an Amazon guy, you listen to podcasts through your Alexa app or something like that, all you have to do is just say our name now and it will start playing the podcast.
Do you have to say SAR or Strange Eons Radio?
You would say play the latest episode from Strange Eons Radio.
Alexa.
I'm listening to see if Kelly's Alexa.
Alexa, play Strange Eons Radio.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
Well, we got some AC/DC coming through, and I'm sure that'll get us canceled on this. So with that going on, I will just say thanks very much. We will be back in 1 week. We're talking costumes and masks.
See ya.
Our podcast is recorded at Eric's house and Vanessa's house and Kelly's house and is engineered and edited by Eric Morgret. Our theme music is Strange Eons Part 1 by the band Nightshade and is used with permission. Find Strange Eons Radio on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and wherever fine podcasts are found.